You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Well, it's been a good Tuesday so far. A lot to like about what the Mariners are doing. Mike Lefko, Ryan Roland-Smith with you, and we'll keep the Mariners talk going as we bring in Joe Fan on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Joe, are you just running through the streets of Vegas right now telling everyone who will listen that Julio Rodriguez should be an all-star?
Well, I've been running through the streets of Vegas since well before the season started, telling everybody to vote, or not vote, but bet on him to win Rookie of the Year in the American League. And so far, it looks like he is paced to do just that. And this isn't an end-all, be-all stat, but I was looking at my fantasy team the other day, and it's a dynasty league, not to brag. I've had Julio for years stashed away.
I know there's a lot of excitement there. So
there is.
Sorry. We'll try.
We have him on a connection.
Hey,
to see if we can get him back.
Too. No,
it was just too much. There was too much going on, and the world didn't want to know about Vegas's bid for Julio Rodriguez to be an all-star.
Yeah, I know. And man, he was getting me fired up. I'm like, man, I'm going to go vote. I'm going to go.
Well, we can't vote anymore,
media.
But I think we got to petition the commissioner's office to make sure Julio Rodriguez is in the all-star game. I should mention this hour, the Mike Salk Show is driven by Wayscarf Ford. But as we get into that, and I think what Joe was probably going to hit on is the fact that it seems like Julio sets a new standard every day.
Yeah,
we've talked about all the, oh, first time since this, or no rookie has done it since Barry Bonds, or the 15 home runs, or the 10 home runs, 15 stolen bases, which he's now broken even more, that hadn't been done since, you know, the 80s. A couple of players in their first or debut season hadn't done that. And just days later, you have to reset the stats because he's breaking more records.
Yeah, I really enjoy the every sort of milestone of games, right? I remember tweeting it out, the Griffey and, you know, the Griffey and Julio comparisons, the first X amount of games. But I know Joe's going to talk about the rookie of the year, but man, we're getting beyond that, I think, when he's putting in the same conversation as Trout and Aaron Judge.
Yeah, Joe, I think there was just too much excitement for Vegas to handle that early in the morning.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, what I was saying is, you know, I've been a proud Dynasty League Julio Rodriguez fantasy owner for a while, and now enjoying reaping the benefits. But I actually looked it up this morning. Pitchers and hitters included, he's the 14th ranked player in all of fantasy baseball, which is no joke. And wow, it's not the end-all, be-all stat. But just like Ryan mentioned, it's getting beyond, okay, is he going to be the American League Rookie of the Year? And yeah, he's not Judge. He's not the favorite. He's not Ohtani yet to be the American League MVP. But he's closer to that conversation than he is, oh, well, how does he compare it to other rookies? I mean, he is now in the conversation already with all of the top superstars in all of baseball, which is pretty rad and something that can't be taken for granted for a 21-year-old.
Joe, I got asked this probably about a month ago about will he get to 40 stolen bases? Now, he's 20-plus now, right? But you think it's one of these things where the Mariners will shut it down for him to take off and steal bases because, you know, now obviously this generation, they don't you know, favor the stolen base as being valuable anymore, and they want to make sure he doesn't get hurt. What do you think on that? Do you think he's going to get 40-plus?
I think it's possible. I don't think that they will shut it down completely. It's just too much of a weapon. And at 21 years old, I think you have to trust that the legs are fresh and he's ready to rock. You know, I think it's different than, say, I mean, going back, how could the Mariners have done anything different than put Ken Griffey Jr. on AstroTurf in the Kingdom every single day?
Right.
You know, I think in terms of sports medicine, in terms of the actual fields and playing surfaces they're playing on, I think guys' bodies are more well taken care of than ever before. And so I think he's too talented and too much of a weapon in that regard to completely shut it down. Maybe they ask him to be more selective about it. But as we've seen, I mean, you know, what, he's been caught four times this year. Most recently, it was when he was there in time and then was too fast and couldn't hang on the bag at third. I just think at age 21, it's too big a part of his game to completely take off the table.
Now, Joe, we've been talking a lot about evaluations because we're just past the midway point of the season. They're 82 games in, and yes, they're under 500, but it looks a lot better right now. So as we were kind of going and looking at the positives and what to look forward to in the second half of the season, when you look at the offense that has struggled a lot, are there guys that you have been optimistic about or surprised about in a positive way? Because I know there have been some disappointments, but outside of Julio, who else has jumped out at you? And I don't want to lead you down a direction, but I'm kind of hinting at Cal Raleigh here.
Yeah, well, you just led me down a direction, dang it.
Ryan gave me grief. Ryan gave me grief for that earlier, so I figured I'd lead you there.
That's exactly where I was going to go. You can't help but be so pumped for him and the team, because this is a guy who was touted as one of the top hitting catching prospects in all of baseball. And it's not just that the numbers weren't good, but the at-bats weren't competitive. And that was what's so impressive about Julio from day one. It looks like he had command of the strike zone. And the bats were competitive, even if he was striking out, where Cal looked like he was guessing. He looked lost. And now he's got, again, command of the strike zone, and you're seeing him barrel up pitches far more frequently. The power numbers are there. The clutch moments are there. And I'm not quite sure, you know, Ryan will be able to speak to what was able to click for him. It was just seasoning and more at bats, but it has been a pretty aggressive turnaround for him, and it couldn't have come at a better time for a Mariners team that's been suffering from so many injuries, Ty France being maybe chief among them, along with Mitch Haniger and Kyle Lewis. So he's been huge. You know, I think the big issue with this Mariners team is they've struggled to find a clutch hit with runners in scoring position. He did so with the bases loaded on Monday, a huge double to clear the bases. So, I don't think you can go to anyone other than him, especially given, you know, at times how much this team has struggled to, you know, they put ducks in the pond, okay, but drive-in runs and clutch moments, runners in scoring position, the bases loaded, has been an issue. And, man, Cal's just been such a pleasant surprise.
Joe, I've been on the fence all year long about Jesse Winker, about, you know, what do I think of him? Not just, obviously, on-field production. You know, it's kind of been up a little bit up and down, glimpses of what he could be from, you know, what we saw last year. But as far as, you know, character and all these things, I haven't quite gotten a good read. But then all of a sudden, the brawl against the Angels on Sunday, when he just took on the dugout, like, he had that opportunity where he had a couple of bodies in front of him where he could talk loud and then back away, like we usually say. What do you got on Jesse Winker, man? Do you feel like the situation in Anaheim kind of changed your perspective on him?
No, I've honestly been all in on Jesse Winker since he got to Seattle. I remember when he showed up in spring training and he was talking about how, you know, this is an organization who wants to win. I can't wait to be here. And you can just tell the vibe when you show up. Then, you know, it was the walk-off early in the season. Well, maybe it was opening night, and he called, I can't remember exactly what game it was, for sure week one, when he called T-Mobile Park the electric factory. And
oh, yeah, you know, it was the first home game. I might have been on the other end of that one.
Yep, that's the kind of, like, personality and juice that he's shown all year. And so I want him to be good so badly. And I think such a bummer of this season is how much he's disappointed in terms of his falling off, especially against right-handed pitching, where he came into the season with, you know, he hadn't had a career with less than like a 130 WRC plus against righties. And he's, at least last time I checked, it was around like 75, might be up now, given he's played a little bit better over the last month. But I want this guy to be good because he is a culture setter. He's a tone setter. He's a guy who is going to lead by example in terms of, hey, we have to carry ourselves like winners, even though we aren't winners yet and haven't done anything yet. And I love that mentality from him. Now, I wish he wasn't suspended 6 games, but at the same time, sometimes you have to stick up for your boys. And I think the Mariners far too often have felt, especially during this 20-year playoff drought, have felt apathetic or just getting through the season or playing it out. And Jesse Winker certainly isn't that guy. And that's what makes this whole team easy to root for, because you have guys like him, JP, Ty France. You know, you can go down the list. Lots of dudes who you just want to see succeed because they're so fun. This team is so fun. I think Jesse Winker is certainly at the top of the list, and I really hope he figures it out and can be a Mariner for a long, long time, because he's just a cool dude.
Yeah, great stuff. You hear him on here every week, Joe Fan. You can follow him on Twitter, @Joe_FANN. Joe, thanks. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you guys. Sorry for the false start, but great to join you, and keep up the great work.
It's all about how you finish, and Joe finished strong, just like the Mariners will. You know, there's the optimism there. They're 40-42, but they are trending upward. 4 straight series wins and a chance to get a sweep and a 5th straight one against the Padres. We'll get into that much more, and the insane numbers that Julio Rodriguez is putting up. All of that is coming up next. Mike Lefko, Ryan Roland Smith in. It's the Mike Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners go for their 5th straight series win. The 110 first pitch, game 2 of the series against the Padres today in San Diego. But yesterday, Julio Rodriguez did something that no one has ever done in MLB history. reaching 15 home runs in 20 and 20 stolen bases in just 81 games. That's faster than Ellis Burke, who did it in 82, and faster than Barry Bonds, who did it in 90. Really a total complete win for the Mariners. 8-2, took a shutout into the ninth inning. Chris Flexen had a terrific outing. 6 2/3 innings and a season-high 8 strikeouts. You're looking at balance. Hard to argue with the results in that one.
Yeah, there was a good one yesterday against a tough team, the Padres. We came off a series, obviously the Orioles and the A's. Like, okay, let's put these guys up against some tough competition right now when they're starting to streak a little bit. And they've got the Blue Jays coming up as well. But Julio Rodriguez, and we got a chance to talk to Joe Fan about this. Will he get to 40 stolen bases, right? First of all, when you were in the same sentence as beating someone like Barry Bonds with some of these numbers, how fast you get to the stolen base and the home run, all of a sudden, you're in that athletic realm of complete player, right? Will he get to 40 bases, 40 stolen bags? What do you think, 25 by the end of the year? Can you get 25 bombs?
Yeah, it's tough with projections, right? Because all the pressure and all the expectations. Yeah. But he's hit a lot of them lately. So he's hitting them in bunches recently. Yeah. So I don't know. You never know with young guys and with baseball. But I think a home run number may be more likely than the stolen bases.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't think he's getting to 40?
I don't think he's getting to 40.
Why is that?
Because there are a number of reasons. Like you said, they might not run him as much. He might hit too many home runs, and he's not going to be on base. Or, you know, you might not take as many risks.
I hope they don't shut him down.
You put me on the spot here. But
I hope
so. I don't think he's getting to 40.
I hope the Mariners don't say, let's just ease up a little bit once mid-August rolls around. Come on. Let him run. Now. Let that be part of his game for sure.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, this is also a big deal. All-Star voting round 2, yes, a second finalist round, begins today. Actually, begins soon. So find a place to vote. Starts at 9 a.m. today. They'll determine starters in the All-Star game. And Ty France is one of those finalists against Vlad Guerrero Jr. at first base. So there are 2 finalists at every infield position. There are 4 outfielders who are finalists. You can vote once a day. Runs until 11 a.m. on Friday, July 8th. It's going to be tough because it's Ty France versus all of Canada. But, Ryan, how cool would this be for the Mariners to get an all-star starter? If Ty France was healthy, I think maybe he's deserving of it. I know it's tough now because he might not even be able to play in an all-star game, although Scott Servais has said they hope to get him back by the Blue Jays series. So if he's healthy, maybe he could be in the all-star game and be there as a representative. But just to see that recognition for what the Mariners have done in a position like that for Ty France to be named an all-star starter.
It's huge, and look, you go back to when he was traded over, he wasn't the big piece to that trade when he came over from the Padres. And look what he's done. Now, all of a sudden, he's one of the toughest outs in baseball. The guy he's gone up against, Vlad Guerrero Jr., who is essentially in the conversation for the face of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball are going to put him on the front of everything. The fans obviously know who he is, regardless of deserving of that starting spot. It would be amazing. It's going to be a tough run for him up against Vlad Jr. for sure, plus the fact he's on the IL.
Well, it'll also help, I think, just get this recognition out there. And we're talking about Julio Rodriguez trying to get him to the All-Star game, Ty France, just to get the notice and the attention building into next year and 2023.
Yeah,
because
sure,
that's the big one. You get all those Mariners starting a hometown All-Star game. That would be pretty special.
That would be insane. Remember, 2001, you weren't here, Mike. I didn't even know if you were born back then.
Oh, my God. 2001, I'm old. Come on. I complained about fireworks this morning. You know I'm old.
But, no, to see what they have 8 guys in Seattle, obviously 116 wins that year. They had 8 guys representing. That was my first year in rookie ball. I remember watching that All-Star game in Arizona, in a hotel room, the Hampton Inn in Arizona, thinking, man, I'm with the best organization ever. Look at this. They've got the All-Star game. Yeah. They've got 8 players. They're all studs. So, yeah, 100% for sure. But even this year, too, and again, going back to it, Julio Rodriguez, whatever you can do to push his name into that All-Star game, can you imagine him in that kind of environment? He's built for that. Let's get it started early for him. What is he, 21 years old?
Yep.
You know, give him just a long stretch of just straight All-Star games so we can watch that show all day long.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the most impressive feat yesterday was not Mariner-related. It was Joey Chestnut winning his 15th mustard yellow belt, 63 hot dogs and buns to win the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. You really should watch if you get a chance. George O'Shea is awesome as the MC with his long, flowing, over-the-top intros for all the eaters. It's just a fun part of the 4th of July, and I know some people don't think it's a sport, and maybe it symbolizes gluttony, but if you dial it down to its basics, just an enjoyable thing to watch and talk about, Joey Chestnut's been impressive.
For sure, and what else, too? He had a... Do you want to call it a... I don't want to give this guy even the recognition of calling it a protest, because then you're going to look
an
in...
awkward...
Just a streak.
Non-invitee on the stage.
Someone rocking up. I think he had some Star Wars gear on or something like that. Got right next to him.
Someone who was lost.
He was lost. Joey Chestnut was in his element. Like you said, the athleticism, the preparation to crush, 60-something plus hot dogs, straight down the gullet. All of a sudden, you've got the protester right next to him. Adrenaline through the roof and just straight headlock, took him to the floor. And you mentioned it too. I forgot about this. He was in a boot, right?
Yeah.
Had a little ankle injury or something.
Foot injury.
Foot injury.
He's playing hurt.
Yeah, he's playing hurt, so impressive, man.
Impressive. That is impressive. That's everything you need to know. I would spend more time on that, but we actually have a big segment coming up. I know you've been looking forward to this. We're going to have Pete Woodworth joining us at 8:30, and then Jason Stark from MLB Network, your guy, he writes for The Athletic as well. So not even going to talk more about the hot dog eating contest, because we want to get to how good these Mariners pitchers have been. Pete Woodworth joins us next. It's a Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We're rolling along here on a Tuesday morning. Mike Lefko alongside Ryan Roland Smith. And I imagine it's a beautiful morning out in San Diego. Just because it's always a beautiful morning out in San Diego. But even more so after an impressive Mariners win yesterday. And right now, Mariners pitching coach Pete Woodworth joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Pete, not to be obvious here, but I imagine your job is a lot easier when your starters have the outings that they've turned in this last stretch and over really the last couple of months of the season.
Yeah, it is. It has been a really fun summer so far with these five guys doing what they're doing right now.
Hey, right off the bat, Pete, I got to ask. Yesterday, I saw a couple of clips of the outfit from Robbie Ray talking the tank top and the cape and everything else, but then I noticed he's wearing it during the anthem. Is that right?
I was under the impression that he was going to wear it the entire game.
Did he wear that the entire game, or was it just for the anthem? Because back in the day, they used to be pretty strict with the uniform, but he was totally fine. Did he wear it the entire game, or did he switch it out?
He came back out in like the third or fourth inning with Mariners gear on, but... Yeah, I want to say from like 11 o'clock until the third inning, he was Captain America.
Oh, that's incredible. I mean, Pete, I think it kind of sums up what we have heard from these guys, especially in the rotation, that it's a tight-knit group, that they have a good bond and they kind of build off each other. And this last stretch, we saw George Kirby turn in an impressive outing. Robbie Ray, then not necessarily one-up him, but match that. And then Chris Flexen yesterday. Is that kind of the bond among this rotation that they are trying to build off each other and make each other better?
Yeah, it is a... Sorry, they're doing some work here on the field. It is an interesting group that... obviously, Kirby didn't start the year with us. But as soon as that kid showed up, like, he initially just gelled with the rest of the four guys. He's obviously had some history with Logan in the past. But this past month, this past 6 weeks, I don't think those guys are just kind of feeding off each other or competing off each other, starts trying to one-up the next guy, trying to, you know, see who can do this better. And they're actually developing off each other as well. Like they're not taking pitches from each other, but, you know, they're making adjustments following, you know, mistakes that other guys have made or adjustments that other guys have made. They're trying some new pitches. They're all evolving really at the same time. So it's been really exciting to be a part of, just to have a front row seat, but to kind of see how these five different guys who go about it completely different, have obviously come from different paths, but right now are just all in sync and working and developing together.
Yeah, Pete, you talk about having a front row seat, and I think there's so much more that goes into your job and your relationship with these guys. I tell people this all the time, you know, how important it is when you're a young pitcher or a veteran guy like Robbie Ray, having a pitching coach that you can bounce things off and go through that process in between starts with. I want to ask you, George Kirby has a rough run against the Baltimore Orioles, right? He's a young pitcher, and I'm sure you're still kind of trying to get to know him on a personal level as well. But what's the process like when he has a rough one like he did against the Orioles and then bounces back? The days in between those starts, what's kind of the process with you and him to get him back to find the things that he needs to do to be successful?
That was an interesting one because, George, he kind of did what he's been doing in that start versus Baltimore. He got ahead. He threw a ton of strikes. He threw all four. Like, he was doing the same process that he has been. They hit him that day. And that happens, you know. Sometimes you catch a team at the right time or the wrong time. Sometimes you catch a pitcher at the wrong time. But the process of how he actually pitched that game was pretty good. So there wasn't a lot of panic. There wasn't a lot of, what do we got to adjust? What do we got to change? It's really the first time he'd been hit hard. It was kind of impressive. He was like, hey, I got ahead. I threw strikes. Like, I'm going to keep going. Like, I'm not going to panic. The Orioles, super aggressive team. Kirby throws a ton of strikes, and they probably knew that. So, you know, it was kind of the perfect storm of an aggressive lineup that chases a ton with a guy that throws a lot of pitches in the zone. So he worked a little bit on executing his two strike locations with all four pitches, expanding the zone for guys and teams that he needs to do that, you know, learning how to throw good balls instead of just strike after strike. And he ran that out this past start and obviously, you know, punched a ton of tickets, but really continued getting ahead and doing the executing the process that is George Kirby and that will make him successful. He didn't really stray too far from.
Hey, Pete, what are you learning kind of about yourself as a coach, when to kind of press with these guys, when to let them figure stuff out on their own? Because a handful of guys, especially in the rotation, are new here or relatively new. I mean, this is just the first full season for Logan Gilbert. George Kirby, still very new to Major League Baseball, and obviously year one here for Robbie Ray. So as a coach in dealing with different personalities, have you had to kind of adjust or assess how you work with each guy?
For sure. That's a great question. They're all at different stages of their career. They're all at different parts. And I probably lean more on the side of letting guys figure it out instead of, you know, pushing or shoving things down their throat. It's five different guys that kind of have five different coaching styles. You are constantly learning and evolving, but like I said, all these guys are hungry to get better. The Robbie Ray one, you let the Cy Young come in and do his thing. You're not really jumping all over that guy, but I've been pleasantly surprised at how much he wants to get better, how much he's willing to be open to making an adjustment. I mean, the guy pulled a two-seamer out of his back pocket a couple weeks ago. And like I said, that's kind of trickled throughout the entire rotation. Guys are seeing success that guys have, kind of making an adjustment here, adding a pitch here, trying something new in the bullpen here, all sorts of things. So as they are kind of coming together, they do have their own unique style that even being with Marco and Logan for the past, 3 years, you're still learning and adjusting to what those guys need on a day-to-day basis.
P, Pete, we're going to talk to Chris Flexen later on in the show, and I'm excited to talk to him because you don't quite he's kind of keeps his answers to the point in the post game. He doesn't really dive in a whole lot, but as a pitching coach, watching him, nothing really stands out. If you're sitting at home watching, and you're like, well, he doesn't throw 100, he doesn't do this, doesn't do that. What makes him? What separates him, in your opinion? What does he do at an elite level to get him the consistency that he has, especially what we saw yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday was a really good one. Kind of the pinnacle of the Flexen that we saw in 21. Yeah, you're right. Flexen doesn't have overpowering stuff. But what makes Flexen special is that he does the little things right. All the small things like getting ahead. He throws 4 and now 5 pitches per strike. You put those two together and you pitch in good counts constantly with 5 different pitches from, kind of a unique relief profile. It doesn't matter what's coming out of the hand, what the stuff looks like. If you're in good counts and you're doing that with multiple options, that's pitching. That's keeping hitters off balance. That's being able to maneuver a lineup 3 times. That is the basis of pitching, and that's what Flexen's really good at. And I don't mean this as a knock to him, but like he's had to do that his whole life. He hasn't really been able to just out stuff guys. So like him and Marco have learned to pitch from a young age and are very talented in that skill set. Which a lot of young guys don't have. And I think we saw that yesterday. You had a little bit more fastball velo, a little bit more stuff yesterday from Flex. And you put that on top of his ability to pitch. And, him and Marco are one of the best at being able to execute with runners in scoring position. When there's a pitch that needs to be made, those guys are pretty stinking good at not trying to do too much, not trying to overpower guys, just knowing like, hey, I'm one pitch away. Like I have this cutter, I have this changeup. All I need to do is execute this pitch, get a ground ball here. They've shown that and Flexen definitely shown that yesterday. Just the ability to pitch.
We spent a lot of time talking about the rotation because they've been so dominant. But before we let you go here, Pete, wanted to get your kind of input on the bullpen and the effort that they have shown down the stretch as well. I know there was a lot of moving pieces early on in the season, and it wasn't the lockdown automatic bullpen that truly defined 2021. But now, as you look at guys like Sewald and Diego Castillo settling into roles, does that group seem more confident to you? What has kind of changed out there with the relievers?
Yeah, that's an interesting point because we just expected to pick up where we left off in 21 and Castillo and Sewald and Steckenrider and those guys are just going to be in postseason playoff form right there in April. It takes a little bit to get going, you're riding a bike, you got to get it moving to start. And I feel like those guys are moving now. They've kind of fine-tuned some things. They went through some adversities early, individually and as a group, and made the proper adjustments. And similar to the rotation, are just kind of feeding off each other, trying to see who can throw the better slider. And they're kind of falling into those roles. The past month. Those guys have really come together and gelled, and we're starting to see consistent, strings of appearances with a handful of those guys. But yeah, like you said, early in the season and even in spring training, like there's a handful of new guys. Guys are feeling things out. Guys are getting back in the groove. And I just feel like this past month, the group has really solidified. Like we've seen Penn Murphy and Andres Munoz, really kind of say, hey, this isn't like a week long stretch. Like, this is real. I got some good stuff. I'm here to help. Ken Giles has been great since he's come back from, you know, his 2 years of rehab. He's definitely helped bring some firepower in the back of that. And I thought since Tommy Malone has gotten here, he's just been a security blanket and a consistent strike thrower, you know, which is always really helpful to have in a bullpen. And then Sewald and Diego and Swanson have kind of, you know, gotten into that groove that they were in last year, and are running with that seventh, eighth, ninth inning right now.
Well, Pete, great stuff. We appreciate it. I know you guys have a game to get ready for, so we'll let you go here. But thanks for joining us this morning.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. That is Mariners pitching coach Pete Woodworth in this hour of the Mike Salk Show, driven by Wayscar Ford. So, yeah, that's what's coming up, Ryan. We have a Mariners game at 1:10. They'll try to finish off the series against the Padres, and if they win, it'll be their fifth straight series win. Tough in a two-gamer, but that's the situation, and it looked good yesterday after the 8-2 win. So a little quick programming note. After we're done at 10, you'll have Bump and Stacy on until noon. A little short show for them because Mariners pregame starts at noon, and that'll carry you up to first pitch at 1:10. So nice little Tuesday on tap as the Mariners try to keep that momentum going. We're going till 10, Bump and Stacy 10-12, and then Mariners pregame at noon. That pitching has been fantastic. I know we're going to get to Jason Stark in just a second here, but yeah, how fun might it be to be a pitching coach right now for the Mariners?
Man, I think people don't quite understand how big of a deal it is when you've got a guy like Pete Woodworth, not only because you could have some absolute pitching guru. If you cannot have that relationship with the guy in the dugout in between innings, in between starts, if you're a George Kirby or if you're Robbie Ray when he's gone through those struggles, when you have someone in the dugout that you can bounce things off, and he can translate a message, game changer, I'm telling you. Because I've had both sides of that for sure.
Well, it'll be interesting to get the national perspective on Robbie Ray and his improvement and a guy like Julio Rodriguez. And right now we welcome in Jason Stark of MLB Network and a writer for The Athletic. Does some terrific work on both of those platforms. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jason, good morning. Thanks for joining us. And we have been on the Julio Rodriguez get him to the All-Star game push. In your eyes, is he doing enough to warrant that?
Yeah, absolutely. Julio to me has become one of the must-see attractions in the league, and just a total game changer, team changer, season changer. I don't know which of his stats blow me away more, but headed for 30 homers and 40 steals at 21. The only player in history to ever do that at 21 or younger was Mike Trout. And that's not a bad comparison.
We were talking about that too, Jason. We were talking about, can he get to 30? Can he get to 40 stolen bags? It's one of these things too. You see teams, you know, around baseball, and we've seen this, obviously, this new era of the stolen base is not as valuable. Speaking of that real quick, do you think the Mariners will start shutting him down, running more to you know, limit him from getting to 40 bags?
That's a really good question. You know, he wasn't a huge base stealer in the minor leagues, as you guys know, but he's so fast. And, when he just makes it look so easy. I don't know why at this point you would stop him from running when it makes him such a force and makes that offense so much harder to deal with. Since May 1st, there's no other player in the whole sport with double figures in stolen bases and a slugging percentage of 550, 560, wherever he's at. I mean, he's a unique force in the sport. He's Ronald Acuna West. To me, if I have a player like that, I let him loose, not hold him back.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with you 100%. Hey, I want to switch gears. Just recently, you know, we've heard so much about the automated strike zone. Umpires are under the most scrutiny I've seen ever. I think maybe because technology helps that, and everyone at home can watch and they can see that floating box and. Yeah, everyone has an opinion on social, and because now all of a sudden you do have that robo arm, sort of, you know, them looking over their shoulder. How did you hear so many different opinions, but how do players and front offices and coaches, when you hear Rob Manfred talk about this is inevitable in 2024 to go with robotic umpires, behind the scenes, how do teams look at that? Is this something that across the board they're like 100% this needs to happen, or is it 50-50? Like how are they taking this?
I think front offices are resigned to it, are ready for it. Players are a little different deal. It's very significant that you've now got this automated strike zone in AAA, so that players at upper levels are starting to get used to it. But I've gone to the Atlantic League now a couple of years in a row where they've had it and talked to players about it. And players who have been through it are not fans of it. And, you mentioned, Ryan, the boxes on the screen. And I had a player say to me, everybody thinks that's what it's like. You know, if you had that box on the screen and then there was instantaneous ball strike call and everybody could see what a strike was, what a ball was, including us, that'd be one thing. But that's not how it works in real life. They've had a hard time getting the robot umps to call what hitters and pitchers both have come to accept through their lifetimes as an actual strike. And so the problem isn't in the technology anymore. It's in trying to define what the technology is going to consider a strike, because what I've seen, what players complain about is you've got these pitches that might tick the corner that don't look like strikes to anybody in the ballpark except the robot.
Right.
But because they tick the strike zone in some way, the upper half, bottom half, they're called strikes. And so what you're seeing at the minor league level is baseball's trying to tinker with the definition of the strike zone so that it conforms more closely to what we all think of as strikes. And that's the part of this that has to get figured out before it comes to the big leagues.
There was talks, Jason, I was on this MLB meeting about rule changes and trends and stuff like that. They kind of came up with this happy medium, and I don't know if this is something that they're considering, where the umpire can basically, a human umpire can sit back there and call balls and strikes, but he has technology in his ear to say, to basically say ball or strike, and he can sort of overturn himself. And then the hitter or the catcher can, if they want, they get like a challenge like in tennis, where they can turn around and say, oh, hold on, yeah, I want to challenge that. Is that something they're considering? I feel like that's just a happy medium where umpires can keep their skill set and catchers can continue to frame pitches and we still have technology and everything else.
Yeah, I think that's a definite option. We're only a couple of months into the Florida State League experiment with that. And so far, it's gotten really good reviews, but it's a really small sample size. I think there are a lot of advantages to it. One of the issues with the automatic ball strike system is that sometimes there's a delay. And I've seen some weird stuff happen with these delays where, you know, a pitch is thrown, everybody thinks it's a ball, the runner on first starts trotting to second, whoops, all of a sudden it's a late-breaking strike, and you know, you have guys stealing bases they don't even know they stole. And this is stuff that they've got to figure out. And if you only have the appeal system, you don't have as much of that. But that's also the problem with the appeal system is, there are certain times where runner's going, runner's not going, runner might have gone. What do you do if the runner took off, stole second, but now there's an appeal, or the runner, wasn't going, but now the ball has changed to a strike, or the strike has changed to a ball? There are issues with that, but I do like the idea that it helps the game move along. It gives catchers, as we've known them, the chance to still demonstrate framing. It gives umpires more leeway. There are advantages to it. It's just with all of this stuff, we've got to go through a lot of reps to figure out what the unintended consequences are.
Hey, Jason, before we let you go here, As we near the trade deadline in the second half of the season, the Mariners sitting here at 40-42. It is below 500. There's some ground to make up. But with their progress and their start to ascend a little bit, is there a move at the trade deadline you think would be practical for them?
We're talking about Jerry DePoto, right?
So there'll be a lot of moves, probably.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry is one of the big wild cards at this deadline because he could buy, he could sell. He could buy and sell at the same time. You know, I think that that makes it hard to say what is the move, because where are they going to be in the standings in 4 weeks? You know, they've got games with the Blue Jays. They've got a ton of games with the Yankees and Astros. If they can come through that and they're still close to the wild card race this year, they're in a great spot to buy, just because those AL East teams have to beat up on each other, and the Mariners have a great schedule down the stretch. I don't think they play a team with a winning record the last 3 weeks of the season. So they'll certainly keep that in mind. And then even if they fall off the pace to be realistic contenders for this year, Jerry clearly sees them as a contender next year and moving forward, so they'd be looking possibly to acquire pieces that help them contend next year and beyond. And so what's that move? This is not going to be a real star-studded deadline, and there's going to be a lot more buyers than sellers. So it's really hard to take any team right now and say, this is the move that changes everything. And the Mariners are right at the top of that list for me.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Well, Jason, thank you. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Hey, enjoyed it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, that is Jason Stark of MLB Network and The Athletic. I know you're really excited to pick his brain, and he had some great stuff there. So there will be plenty of conversations over the next few weeks about what the Mariners need to do and if there is that one-size-fits-all move to get this team into playoff contention and make a real chase at the wild card race. But coming up next, we are going to shift some things around a little bit. We have Chris Flexen joining us at 9:45. So we're going to do ranked at 9 o'clock. Chaos, I know. But we're going to rank some things coming up next. It is the Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.